It's time, Fort Wayne. Your sports, your station. It's the Sports Rush with Brett Rump.
Three ball, Max Landis.
Covering all the topics that hit a nerve here in the Summit City.
Clark, 11-yard touchdown.
Only on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Now, here's your host, Brett Rump.
The greatest, most interesting, most important person of all time.
You are incredible.
Over the boys.
This is amateur hour. This is gonna be huge. I believe this is gonna be off my stage. Just when I think you've said the stupidest thing ever, you keep talking. I think that's the worst thing I've ever heard. That boy ain't right. The simplest way to put it, I have problems.
Welcome to the alleged show.
Here we go, taking you over the hump on a Wednesday. It is the Sports Rush. Your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump, along with Adam Lundy. We've got you connected on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862. We are back in the studio. Little fresher start to the show today. Little technical issue yesterday. I want to pull back the curtain, Adam, because sometimes, you know, you hear these things. And of course, everybody wants to get all bunched up about it, but here's the point. We're running out of two studios right now. Things from a technical standpoint aren't exactly like they're going to be because we're in the process of building brand new studios. And so we're kind of doing the best with what we've got. And I mean, one little button that isn't set properly between the two studios and things like yesterday, which to the listener sounds a little more little bigger than just one little tiny button in one studio. So, it was a little rough start, but we had a great show yesterday. A lot of fun and opening night at the Tin Caps Ballpark at Parkview Field. Unfortunately, it was much more fun before the game than it was after the game. Tin Caps got whooped a little bit, 7-2, as Lake County popped four home runs last night. But always great to get a chance to meet our listeners. And, of course, as fans came in, they were taking advantage of the free koozies that we were passing out. So always fun to get out and see the people. And we got a chance to see and meet the people yesterday.
Absolutely. Had another gentleman when I was packing up come and stop by and say, love listening to the station.
Awesome.
You had gone up to your TV duties. But, it was a great time. I love when people come up and say, hey, love listening to 1380 The Fan.
And did they come up and they say, are you Brett? Adam's like, yes, I am. Well, first he'd say, it depends.
Yeah, who's asking?
Yeah, who's asking? It depends on your text. What's your phone number so we know? Yeah, we've got your numbers memorized on our text line. We know. But, it was a lot of fun last night. Really appreciated that. And then, like you mentioned yesterday, I had the TV side.
Yeah.
And it was kind of nice for those that couldn't watch the game. We've got the radio broadcast, which we do all year long, with Mike Maz and Jack Gordon on the call last night. Tonight it's going to be Mike Maz and some schmuck named Brett. That's all.
Oh, no.
Yep, I'm jumping over to the radio side. You know.
Look out.
Yep, no makeup required. Somebody actually asked me if for the 30 seconds or so that we're actually on camera doing a television broadcast, if I have to use makeup.
Little
and
concealer.
I'm like, no, they did. Yeah, no, they decided a long time ago. Makeup is not going to help. It's not a problem of makeup. But anyway, so I'll be on with Mike Moss. Looking forward to that tonight, and hope you tune in. Hope to see you at the ballpark. And if you don't see you at the ballpark, be sure to tune in to Tin Caps Baseball tonight with me and Mike, starting at 6:15 with the pregame show. That will be traffic optional, or it will be based on traffic. If I can get there.
What?
I don't have a use of the chopper to time.
Oh, what? What's wrong with the chopper?
There's no place to land it.
Oh.
I talked to the pilot, and he said, you know what? By the time we get you landed where we'd have to land you, it'll take just as long as it will to drive to the ballpark. So I'm on four wheels, taking off, going to the ballpark tonight.
Well, we all know Keith Winter doesn't want you landing that thing on the grass.
No, can't land it out in center field. It would be dramatic, and it would be kind of exciting, but can't land the Sports Rush. It would be a great promotion, but Sports Rush chopper cannot land out in center field, especially on that new flat surface.
Lovely out there.
Just what they need, a couple of, the tracks or whatever. I don't even know what they call it on the bottom of the chopper.
Yeah.
46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. The numbers are in, and the NCAA should use this as a wake-up call to change things. It's time for big changes with the NCAA tournament. The national championship, Monday night, between two number one seeds, arguably the two best teams in men's basketball this year, was outdrawn by South Carolina and Iowa. And not just by a few hundred thousand, no, by millions. More people tuned in to see South Carolina beat Iowa than tuned in to watch UConn beat Purdue. And I'm telling you, it's one thing only. You're playing the national championship on a weeknight, and you're not tipping it off until 9:20 at night.
And it was a TBS year.
You've got NTBS, but you've got two Eastern teams that are in Eastern time zone. Purdue's in the Eastern time zone, right?
They are.
And so you've got two in the Eastern time zone, and you tip it off at 9:20. Even the fans of UConn and Purdue couldn't last until the end of the game. One shining moment. I was joking with our boss here, Caleb, the other day. And I said I was determined to stay awake until one shining moment, because it's a moment I don't like to miss each year. Love to see how they put it together and what are some of the highlights and just go back and recall some of the great moments of the tournament. And he laughed and said, I did the same thing. I said it was like 12:04. I said it wasn't even on. The one shining moment wasn't even on TV on the same day as the game. And he laughed. He said, I stayed up too. And I'm like, you stayed up? You've got to be here for a show at 7 a.m.
Right. He had to be down at Parkview Field.
Oh, that's right. He was at Parkview Field even the next morning.
Yep.
Of course, that's a shorter drive. So.
Oh, yes. There you go.
You know, he might have been able to stay up a little later that night. But
maybe.
Still, after midnight, I thought I was pushing it. And I get to sleep till 6:30, 6:45 in the morning.
Yeah.
But anyway. Yeah, the numbers are in. 19 million, just short of 19 million that watched the women's game. And you had just short of 15 million that tuned in for the men's championship. And you brought it up. One of the real issues here, there's multiple issues. Time is one. But one of the real issues is the fact that viewers have to guess where is the game going to be this year.
Yeah.
What station am I going to search for it? You know, and I'm like, does CBS not want to bring 15 million eyeballs to their network? Do they really have programming that is so much better that it brings more than 15 million people? Here's what CBS and the NCAA has to work out. Okay, they can rotate a secondary broadcast. They could do like ESPN does.
Yeah.
They can rotate a secondary broadcast. They can do something different, and they can have it on all of the different networks that cover the tournament. But the play-by-play of the NCAA championship has to be on network television on CBS. Now, if you want to take TNT and TBS and True TV and you want to do some type of alternate broadcast, whether it's fan perspective, whether it's studio host, whatever you want to do, just don't make it Taurasi and Bird. But you can put together a studio show or whatever you'd like to do behind the scenes in the truck.
Sure.
It doesn't matter. But the idea is that fans should not have to. It shouldn't be the roulette of the NCAA championship game each year where you have to pick a network and check the guide. Oh, not on this network. Let me try another. Especially when, like in mine, when I choose the guide, I have to scroll through all the stations, right?
Right.
And TBS, TNT, True TV, and CBS are not close to one another. I got to scroll for a long time to try to find it.
Yeah.
And so now I know there's voice remotes and all this. Somebody will say, get caught up with the technology, you know, and I'm like, OK, I'm old school. Right. I have to search for it and scroll with it and go with the up and down key. But but the bottom line is, yes, Adam, that's a problem that it's not constantly on CBS. And you don't try to bring in new viewers by having alternate broadcasts. Maybe you put Charles Barkley on an alternate broadcast where you can talk and give commentary during the course of the game.
Chuck and Kenny.
Chuck and Kenny.
Why not?
Chatting hoops while the game's going on, right? Like the Manning cast.
Exactly.
Right? And so they could do that. Number two, it is the time. Too many people on the Eastern time zone. Even when it goes until after 11:30 or close to 11:30 till you finally get to the end of the game and you get to crown the champion and hear a post-game interview, you know, it's after 11:30, right?
Right.
And there's no reason it should be 11:30. I always have solutions. I don't, you know, every time, Adam, that I complain about a topic, I try to provide a solution. Because I don't want to be the guy that can sit here and just complain how everybody else does it. But not in my own mind have a way to make it better. So I have got the solution. And, you know, the NCAA is not that far down the road in Indianapolis. Maybe they could be tuned in today. I hope they are. But number one, I already mentioned, CBS carries the play-by-play. All the other stations are secondary broadcast. Whatever ones that, you know, they choose to, the CBS and Turner choose to do. Okay, tough for Turner. I know Turner pays a big buck for this. Is it Time Warner now? I don't know if it's Turner, Time Warner. And I know they're, you know, they're in cahoots with CBS. But CBS is the network. And the NCAA has to hold firm here. And I know they probably have a few years on their deal. I don't know when the current deal expires, but they've got to make some adjustments to this. It isn't working, and it isn't in the best interest of the television networks involved. So, you know, number one, get the game on CBS. Number two, the game has to start earlier. But my biggest solution to this entire mess, and I feel bad because I wrote this up and then I realized Caleb and Kenny talked about it this morning and had the same idea, which really frustrates the hell out of me that I got the second show of the day. But they need to play it Friday, Sunday. The days of playing this on Saturday, Monday don't work. The one reason I think why it was put on Monday, and this is just a guess. Somebody try to back me up on the text line 46862 if I'm right, if I'm wrong on this. But I do believe when the original contracts for a lot of the championship events were set up and games were moved from the weekend into a weeknight, like the college football championship, which just tries to find its own exclusive window, the NCAA basketball championship, I believe that part of that, and the reason it's on Monday night, is because the network wanted to have it count on their primetime ratings numbers for that month or for that season. That's the way I perceived it to be. I could be completely wrong, but you know, moving it to a Monday night, putting it into, quote, primetime. The only problem is, it goes past prime time. The second half, almost the entire second half, or at least a portion of it, is played outside of what we would consider our prime time window. And what I think needs to happen, first of all, the women get Friday, Sunday, and obviously if fans are interested, they will tune in by the millions on Sunday. And I think that should be the lesson to the NCAA. That we've got sports fans who like watching their sports on the weekend. Not when they have to get up and work the next day. Not when they might be working second shift at night. Not when they come home after working a 9-10 hour day that day. No, they want to watch sports when they can kick back, maybe have a cold one, and enjoy a good sports contest. So, you've already got the women right now, Friday, Sunday. Okay, let's scrap that and move the women to Thursday, Sunday. Okay, so the women have an opportunity to get the same stage on the same day as the men. You could have the women's championship, and the men's championship could tip off an hour and a half or 2 hours later. It doesn't mean it's in the same site. That's not what I'm recommending. What I'm saying is take advantage of the fact that people will watch these games if they're on a Sunday more than they will watch them on a Monday. And so men, Friday, Sunday, women's Thursday, Sunday, I think we're fine. We could put it to rest and we don't have to stay up till midnight waiting for one shining moment when two Eastern time zone teams are actually competing for the championship. That was just crazy. And something's got to change for the NCAA. Do you have thoughts? Let us know. 46862. I do have this, that the women play their Elite Eight on Sunday, Monday, and then they make them come back and play their Final Four on Friday. So I think the women's Elite Eight would have to move up a day. I think their tournament would have to move up a couple of days. So I do think there would have to be some changes to the format of the women's tournament all the way through for that to happen. But like right now, it's like, okay, so the women play their Elite Eight Sunday, Monday, while the men are already done Saturday, Sunday, but yet the women's Final Four starts first, which means the women only have 4 days and the men have six between their Elite Eight and the Final Four. And I'm like, okay, that's right there. I think if somebody really looks into this, this is Title IX right here. You can't give women less rest than you give the men. But no, seriously, I think this can be worked out where the women can play Friday, Saturday, perhaps in the Elite Eight, or something can be done to move it up a day and then let them play their Final Four Thursday night and Sunday. Maybe it's Thursday night, Sunday afternoon. Because I also feel like the game was impacted. The quality of the game between Iowa and South Carolina was impacted by the short turnaround. They play Friday night, and then they come back and play Sunday afternoon. That's a day and a half of rest. Most of these teams aren't used to a day and a half. Caitlin Clark looked gassed. And I think these games take a little more out of you than some of the regular season games because they're high-level competition. There's high stakes, so you've got a little extra adrenaline. You probably don't sleep quite as well because you're on the road for most of the month of March playing in these tournament games. Now, the women, of course, it's a little different. They do get to play at home the first couple of rounds. But my point is, can we all agree that there were periods where Caitlin Clark did not look like herself? She looked gassed. And by having an extra day with the women's tournament and having 2 days off instead of one, nobody's going to feel like it's an eternity. The cities that host won't mind. They'll get an extra day of hotel expenses. And I think the teams that go, if they've got to go over a four-day stretch instead of a three-day stretch, I don't think you're going to hear a lot of complaining. Maybe the first year, I don't think we should have to go for 4 days. Men only have to go for three. You make the Final Four. It's a pretty special event. I had a buddy of mine that paid to go to see Purdue out in the stadium. Had okay seats. But the point was, it was going to cost a lot of money. That's all I'll say. A lot of money. And his reply to me is, I've waited 44 years for this moment. I'm not missing it. And I think that's the way you'd feel about the women's Final Four. One extra day, what's that cost? Certainly isn't what my buddy paid to go out to Phoenix.
Good bit of change there.
46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. 46862. Coming up later this hour, Sam King, he'll talk about Purdue a little bit. And where does this leave the Boilermakers heading into next season? Do they have needs? Do they have any concerns about the portal? We'll talk to Sam King about everything Purdue basketball coming up at 4:35. And hour number two, Shane Alberani, Comets with a must win. Absolute must win tonight at Wheeling. A game that was rescheduled from Friday. And we're going to talk to Shane Alberani to get a preview. That's coming up at 5:20. And about 5:30, Kevin Bowen will join us to talk little Boilers. We'll talk NCAA tournament. We'll even get into the NFL draft. That's coming up with KB at about 5:30 this afternoon. Let's find out what else is happening in the world of sports. It's time for today's top headlines with Adam Lundy.
All right, thanks, Brett. Well, Purdue wing Ethan Morton has entered the transfer portal. Morton has spent his entire four-year career at Purdue, but he had his greatest impact during the 22-23 season. A native of Butler, Pennsylvania, he averaged 3.8 points per game, 2.9 rebounds per game, and 2.4 assists per game
in the 22-23 season. A little bit of a downturn this past season, but he's in the transfer portal.
Might as well go ahead and cancel Sam now. We don't need him. Adam just filled us in. Ethan Morton is in the portal.
It's over now.
Yeah.
Adam Silver says what Raptor center Jontay Porter is accused of is, quote, a cardinal sin, and that punishment for it could go up to banishment from the NBA.
Wow.
On January 26th and March 20th, there was an unusually high amount of money placed on bets for Porter to go under his expected stats. In both instances, Porter exited the game early, allowing those who had placed the unders bets to win. And the Indiana Fever will have 36 of its 40 games on the WNBA's national broadcast and streaming partners.
Why?
Including 8 times across ABC, ESPN.
What, the WNBA noticed the 19 million that tuned in on Sunday?
And ESPN, too. They might have noticed. Other games will be on ION, NBA TV, Prime Video, and the CBS Sports Television Network. The WNBA draft is, of course, on Monday, and the Fever are poised to take Iowa star Caitlin Clark with the first overall pick. Let's look at your top stories today, Brett.
I think that's pretty much a given. I don't think that there's much debate. They're not meaning to discuss their options here with the number one.
Not a board of multiple options.
No. I don't think they're conducting a lot of interviews. I think they pretty much are set. The Caitlin Clark is going to the Indiana Fever, and that draft is like a week away.
It's on Monday.
It's on Monday. It's on not Monday. Even a week.
Nope.
I mean, they finished their championship, cut down the nets, and head straight to the dress shop to get their clothing for the draft.
Pretty much.
And then it's only like 6 weeks, 5 or 6 weeks, we're going to see him playing.
Yeah, we talked to Rakestraw. It said it would be only a matter of weeks until she's playing meaningful basketball for the Fever.
Absolutely crazy. Kind of out of the blue last night, Stanford's women's basketball coach, Tara Vanderveer, who has been one of the best coaches, not only in women's basketball, but in basketball in general, over 1,200 career wins. And she announced that she is calling it a career. She is retiring. And I'm sure, you know, a lot of these older coaches that are near retirement, a lot of the issues with the NIL, I think, are very motivating for them to consider retirement when maybe they wouldn't have. Because I look at her and I don't think that she's too old to continue with her job. But I do think the move to the Big Ten, the extended travel that's going to be coming up, and the NIL, which the money is just getting ridiculous. And it's you have to be not only a coach, but now you've become the team general manager. And it's a totally different responsibility. And Tara Vanderveer is calling it a career for the Stanford Cardinal. Also, well, Indiana State's run was a lot of fun this year, wasn't it?
Yeah, had a blast.
I think Purdue might make it to the Final Four before Indiana State has another season like they just had, because Indiana State is, I don't want to say back to rock bottom, because certainly they got a lot of great publicity and all with what they just did. But it's not Florida Atlantic at all, where Florida Atlantic decided, bring everybody back, we're sticking in this together. First, the coach jumps, and Josh Schertz ends up at St. Louis, and the follow-up is every one of their 5 starters is entering the portal, plus one of the reserves. I mean, it's kind of like a whole new-look team is going to have to be assembled. Now, here's the thing that's crazy about this is Indiana State was prepared. They had an associate head coach, Matthew Graves, and almost immediately they announced he would be the interim head coach. And I don't know exactly what his interim tag was, if that meant that he was going to coach for the following season and they'll reevaluate. I don't know what his interim status was, other than for recruits, we have somebody that's on staff that's going to continue to call you. But I think it's interesting because the whole purpose, you make that transition where you immediately announce a staff person that's currently at the school on the staff is taking over the program, is to try to avoid exactly what is happening.
Right.
I mean, you want to have some continuity so the players don't all just jump ship. They at least stay through the transition and isn't happening.
No, and I mean, that's why I think Kentucky needs to get a head coach here in sooner. They're going to lose a lot of their top, you know,
they
players.
Kind of already
right,
have.
Right, exactly.
And, I mean, they've lost quite a few as well. So, Indiana State just a little closer to home.
Right, but it's just another one of those situations where you see now with the transfer portal being the option now when you lose
so
a coach.
So accessible. Easy to move on. Now, I will tell you this, that I think any time that there's a coaching change.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. No matter what the rules have been, because before, you know, you couldn't transfer without sitting out a year. Even then, Adam, I was saying, if the coach leaves, skip the year of sitting out. That's not fair. The coach doesn't miss a season. You know, they go to their new job. They break a contract. It doesn't matter. Some cash is exchanged, and that coach is right back on the sideline and coaching in that office less than a week later. So I've always said that if a player opts to leave a university because of a coaching change, that he should not have to sit out a year. Now, they've changed the rule now where you don't have to sit out the year. But I can't argue with players that enter the portal when there's a coaching change. So this is certainly not an indictment on these players that have decided they need to find a new place, because I know firsthand in college basketball, that relationship you have with a coach, it's almost like having a second father. You're living with them all but just a couple of weeks a year. You're putting your future life in their hands, because they take a certain responsibility in your development, in what you learn about the game, how you personally perform, the opportunities that you're given. There is a very strong bond that is developed between head coach and player. And when a head coach leaves, I think it's only fair, and I don't want to say right, because I think all the players have to make the decision that's best in their best interest, just like the coach did. But in this case, Indiana State unanimously decided that they were better to seek greener pastures. Now, I don't know what the NIL program is at Indiana State. That certainly could be a factor here. And in fact, when you look through the NIL portal and you see the 1,400, 1,500 names that are now in the portal, I think probably 80% of them, 75% of them, I can't go that high, but I will say 50% of them are probably looking for better NIL funding. And then you have the guys that just didn't get the amount of playing time. They're not in the right system. Their coach has changed. And then you have those guys. But money is driving college basketball right now.
No question about it.
I mean, I know personally some names that have entered the portal.
Yep.
Where you're hearing numbers thrown around that they're out in the market looking for $500,000. They want $400,000. And it's like, so I just want to make it very clear to my audience right now, especially any coaches that might be listening, I do have some eligibility left, and I'm willing to go for $250K.
Shoot, I'll go for $100,000, and I can hit more threes than Brett.
And he's got a highlight video. He's actually
check out my huddle. Yeah,
verbal commits and huddle, where you can check out the shooting performance of Adam Lundy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have anything because back in my day it was film, so we have nothing digital to show you. I'll send you my 16mm.
Yeah,
get your projector ready. I'll show you my highlights. I'm 250K if you got a spot open.
I'll do it for cheaper. Throwing that out there.
Yeah, I know. That's not the way bidding is supposed to work, Adam. You're not supposed to just come in after I set my price and start undercutting me.
Too bad. I need the money.
We'll take a break. We got Sam King going to join us on the other side. Talks of Purdue basketball. It's the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Okay, so the listener caught me. I did say Stanford going to the Big Ten. It's Stanford going to the ACC, where the travel will be no better than it would have been in the Big Ten, where they will have to go across the country to play many of their games. Still the same point. It's like you're changing from a conference where you can go into one area, play a couple of games over a weekend, and come back, to where all of a sudden now you're going back and forth across the country. And I do think that probably played a part in the decision. Now, she may have already had decided that she's getting close, when would be the right time, but I think it's too much of a coincidence that it's right before they make the jump to the ACC. We saw Final Four action on Monday night championship game when UConn knocked off Purdue, and somebody who had a better seat than we did is joining us right now on the Sports Rush Hotline. It is Sam King from the Lafayette Journal and Courier. Have you recovered from your jet lag yet?
I got home at about 4 a.m., so
wow.
I'm just now trying to adjust to the fact that it's not 3 hours earlier here in Indiana.
I laugh because I talked about how, you know, with journalism, with print journalism, everything is so budget conscious. And, you know, for everybody that got a chance to follow the team and was supported by their company, I salute that company for making the decision to put the reporters there on the sideline in the press conferences. I think it's a great idea. But I also know there were some ungodly flight comments. I know Dylan here in Fort Wayne had to go like Phoenix to San Francisco to Seattle to Chicago to Dallas to Fort Wayne. I don't know. He was on a plane for like 15 straight hours. It was crazy. But you did get to be there. First of all, on TV, that looked like a way oversized place to have a basketball game. What was it like and what kind of comments did you hear, Sam?
Well, yeah, the first day, I guess the second day that I was out there, the first day that the stadium was opened, I went to the locker rooms, the press conferences and all that stuff and was doing my work and kind of just got the bright idea that I might want to go out there and see what this thing looks like. So myself and a couple of other reporters walked into the stadium where the basketball court was right in the middle of a football field, and that was the first reaction was like, oh, my gosh, this place is enormous. I can imagine it's very easy to play basketball in a place like that, an elevated court. Your sight lines are way different. There's, you know, 75,000 people in there when the games are going on. I mean, if it's not nerve-wracking as a player, then you've got this nerves of steel, I guess, because that was intimidating for me, and I was just sitting there watching it. So, yeah, that was enormous, wild to kind of see a basketball game played in that sort of environment. But I guess they're going to make a big deal about it, and every team wants to be there. So everybody's going to, you know, nobody's going to complain about the view or what the stadium looks like when you get there if you're in that situation.
Well, you know, and the NCAA used to, when they started putting these games into stadiums, they kind of short-sighted the seating where they used kind of the one end zone and put the court long ways across the what would have been the football field. And so they used like a third or half of the stadium. Now they're trying to take advantage of the whole stadium. I don't know if it's real fair to fans. I guess fans that want to be there know they can get a seat. I know a number of people that were buying tickets as soon as Purdue won their Elite Eight game, but it still seems kind of ridiculous to try to play basketball in a building that size. Let's talk about what happened in the game. Connecticut wins it. I think they made a clear point. Sometimes after games like this, there's what ifs. I just don't know if there are any what ifs for the Purdue team after UConn beat them on Monday.
No, and it was going to take almost a flawless game. That Connecticut team was definitely on a mission. Ends up being, you know, the pretty much the best tournament run in history in terms of two straight years of beating everybody by 13 plus points. Beat every team in the tournament this year by 14 or more, and had a much tougher path than the championship team of a year ago. So. Props to that team. You look at the, you know, there's probably three NBA lottery picks starting for that team. And when it got into halftime, I'm sitting there thinking, you know, Purdue's not playing poorly and is down six. Whereas two nights before, I was like, Purdue didn't play very well and Purdue's up. You know, so I think after the halftime of that North Carolina State game, I was kind of like, Purdue's in a great situation. Whereas Monday night, I was like, Purdue might be in trouble here. And unfortunately for the Boilermakers, it's a team that really relies on defenses collapsing on Zach Edey and getting some open threes because of that. And UConn having a 7'2" guy who's a pretty good defender just decided, like, hey, if Zach Edey can beat Donovan Clingan, so be it. But we're not going to let those shooters get going and kind of crush us. And that was the thing. Purdue only taking 7 3-pointers is mind-blowing, but they just couldn't get open looks, couldn't get shots off. And the people that want Purdue just to shoot more threes, you can't just take three-pointers because you want to take three-pointers. I mean, they've got to be good shots. And if you're just chucking up shots because of it, you're going to get blown out by a lot more than 15.
What about Matt Painter's use of the bench? During the tournament, he clearly shortened it. And I thought in the championship game, it cost Purdue a little bit. I'm not sure they had a better answer on the bench just because of how good UConn was. But I thought fatigue was a bit of a factor with the guys that were out there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, clearly, he got to the point where Zach Edey's playing 40 minutes, Braden Smith's playing 40 minutes, and in two of the last three games, we saw Zach Edey airball a free throw, which is mind-blowing. The guy shoots 70-plus percent from the free throw line, so he was, I mean, they got everything they could out of him in this tournament run, and I get it, you're not there without him, but you also saw what happened when Painter realized, man, we've got to get Zach Edey out of the game and let him get a breather real quick, and then unfortunately for Caleb Burst, gets thrown into a tough spot. UConn immediately goes at him, and they get an and-one. And 8 seconds later, Caleb Burst is coming out of the national championship game with a foul, and that's pretty much the extent of what he got to play. So I think Purdue knew we have to ride these guys. What Matt Painter tried to do a little bit on Monday night was rely on Camden Heidi and Miles Colvin, who are more athletic mm-hmm. than Fletcher Lloyd. Still didn't work. UConn's guards are really good. They were able to still get shots. I think there were too many really good players on UConn, and where Purdue was trying to obviously go to Edey as much as it could, but trying to match that with guys who were just out-physicaled, out-athleted, I guess is the word, didn't match. So, you know, Camden Heidi gets an all-time great highlight out of it.
Yeah.
But it was clear that one team was better than the other team that night.
Sam King joining us from the Lafayette Journal and Courier, just getting back from Phoenix. And, Sam, when you look back a year ago, coming off the defeat, Zach Edey decided, we're going to run this back. I want to take another shot at it. I think it's very easy for guys. It's kind of like I kind of picture in my mind the guy that leads you into war. And he takes off right into the opposing front, and you've got to follow him. I mean, you're all together in the mission. This year it's different. Zach Edey's leaving. Purdue obviously is expected to take some kind of a step back. And already Ethan Borton has entered the portal. What is expected there for the Boilermakers? I know everybody has been unified in this mission to accept their roles and all. But it was a little different this year. You were playing for a national title. That was the goal. What does Purdue expect to see now that the season's over? Will this roster return? Do you think there are some guys that might be vulnerable to the transfer portal? What's your expectation?
I just actually posted about this about 5 minutes ago. I've talked to these guys, and obviously during the season, nobody's saying, hey, I'm leaving. Hey, I'm, you know, the guys like Ethan Morton and Mason Gillis probably actually, in a weird way, got hurt by this run in terms of what am I going to do next year, because you're not going to enter the transfer portal while you're still playing. And I don't know why it is this way, but the portal opens when the NCAA tournament starts. So you have basically 3 weeks there where you're still playing and not thinking about your future. And then you get to the point where now the national championship game's over and you've got to make a pretty quick decision. And that's what Ethan Morton told me the other day, is like, whatever I'm doing, I got to decide quick, because you know, I'm already behind the eight ball here if I'm going to go somewhere else and play. Mason Gillis, as of Monday night, told me he was unsure about his future, but he's a guy that I could see going somewhere else and playing next year, as much as that would hurt Purdue fans. But you're still oversigned by one, even if all of the seniors leave. Zach Edey's not coming back, as much as Purdue fans are like, hey, let's do this one more time. It's time for him to go. He made it. Mm-hmm. Good decision to come back. He helped his NBA stock. He got to a national championship game, and there's no guarantee if he comes back you ever make a run like this again. So you got to now kind of get creative and think, who is going to leave? And you know, I see the people on Twitter that are just throwing out names, and it's every guy who is Caleb Furst or Brian Waddell, because they don't play a lot. Well, sometimes guys accept roles and they're okay, and you know, Caleb Furst is very academic minded. I think that keeps him at Purdue, obviously, there for more than just basketball. But you do have to find a way, whether that's an incoming freshman going to a prep school for a year and then reclassifying, something like that. Purdue's got to find a way to open up a scholarship spot, because right now you've got 14 guys for 13 spots.
Where is Will Berg in next season's plans?
I think Will Berg is a guy that can help you. He's not going to go out there and play 40 minutes like Zach Edey, but he's a giant human being that he has more shooting touch. He can do some different things. I definitely see him as a guy next year if he keeps developing. He's maybe gives you that depth at center that you thought you wanted to have this year until you realize the most dominant player in college basketball in the last 50 years has got to be on the floor pretty much 40 minutes for us to win a game. So I see a role for Wilberg next year for sure. And then obviously Daniel Jacobson, a 7'3" kid coming in who's a shooter and can dribble a little bit and kind of has a kind of a Kevin Durant frame. I'm not going to compare him basketball-wise to that, but he's got that kind of a frame, and he's got the ability to do some things that Purdue didn't do from a center standpoint this year, which was we have a 300-pound guy who's unstoppable. Just put him under the basket and throw him the ball.
When you look at college basketball, the big opening at Kentucky has been top of the news cycle. You know, it's almost like it overshadowed the UConn win over Purdue. It's such a out of the left field story where Coach Cal is taking the job at Arkansas. Now, of course, everybody's question, who's next at Kentucky? What do you think happens down in Kentucky?
I think Scott Drew becomes the head coach at Kentucky. And as soon as that happened, some of us were kind of out having some food and adult beverages that night and discussing, you know, Nate Oates seems like a good choice there. Scott Drew, and somebody said, would Matt Painter go to Kentucky? And I see absolutely no way. That just seems like a bad fit overall. I know Kentucky's a great job and tons of money and a great fan base, but it just seems like there are some perfect fits. And I think in an ideal world of college basketball, Matt Painter and Purdue kind of go hand in hand. But yeah, I could see Scott Drew from Baylor being the next Kentucky coach. Haven't seen a whole lot of like rumblings on Twitter, but that seems like a pretty logical explanation when you consider that Nate Oates, who also seems like a good fit, has a massive buyout and just went to Final Four.
Sam, it sounds like you've got some reporting to do. We just saw Jeff Goodman reporting Mason Gillis is in the portal officially.
Oh, that's not a surprise. I fully expected that. I actually, when I sent the story I just told you about, I said don't send this to the print product yet because I think Mason Gillis is going to make it.
Yep, it's official, Sam. So we'll let you get on that and get out whatever kind of social media and adjustments you've got to take care of with your editor. But we certainly appreciate you jumping on with us. Great coverage from Phoenix.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yep, that is Sam King, Lafayette Journal and Courier, joining us here on the Sports Rush. So do we need a breaking news sounder with this since it came out while we're talking to the Purdue beat reporter? Mason Gillis entering the portal.
There you go.
So Ethan Morton and Mason Gillis both entering the portal.
Yeah, he was a sniper. He averaged 6.5 points and 3.7 boards this past season while shooting 47%.
Yeah, he had some games where he really was on fire from three. I'm thinking of the one Penn State game. But here's the thing. You look at a guy like Mason Gillis, and he provides a coach with such versatility because you can use him as kind of a three. You can go to a four. In some scenarios, Mason Gillis might be able to handle the opposing five man if a team's playing a small five. But so I think Mason Gillis will be very valuable to another team.
Text on the text line, somebody says Gillis to Gonzaga is the rumor right now.
Really?
Apparently that's the rumor, but shout out to the text line 46862.
He'd be good with Gonzaga.
I think he would be.
With that type of system?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not trying to, you know, give Mason his next opportunity here, but I could see that being a fit.
Sure.
It's a long trip from Newcastle.
Yeah.
He's one of those Indiana guys.
Absolutely.
But Mason Gillis joining Ethan Morton in the portal for the Purdue Boilermakers. Both of those announced earlier today. Coming up in hour number two, we've got a busy hour. Shane Alberani is in Wheeling, West Virginia. Comets with a must-win road game against the Wheeling Nailers. We're going to find out the keys and who might be the one that gets the call in the net tonight for the Comets. Also, the Comets have had a pretty good record against Wheeling. What's the key to that? What do the Comets have to do to keep that streak going? Also, Kevin Bowen is going to be joining us from Indianapolis, so it's a packed hour. Don't go anywhere. Keep with us. It's the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.